Hello, everybody. The following is a recorded discussion of the Daily Maxims and More for January 10th, 2011. The topics for today were over authority and power.
Okay, let's go to the maxims first. We'll start down through here. And yesterday, I had a very important phone call. I'd been told it would be coming, but I tried to tell him to make it after 1:30. He didn't quite make it. And it really didn't start till after 1:30. So we could have finished. Anyway, a delegated power cannot be again delegated. A deputy cannot appoint a deputy. Now, I'd stop and pause a little bit there because in our system of government, all power is vested in the sovereign, a priest and a king. And so when they start to set up a government, they're going to share their power or delegate it. So a delegated power cannot be again delegated. That fact that you have in the Constitution given 17 delimited or specific powers to the Congress of the United States, that cannot be given to anybody else. Okay?
Yes.
And I was mentioning some of the agencies that exist in the de facto, like power commissions, communication commission, the Interstate Commerce Commission. These really are, a landmark case by a gentleman in Houston, Texas, by the name of Jackson, proved and was accepted and won that every one of those agencies are nothing more than an office with in the legislature. However, they act like they're sitting in the executive branch. And most people assume they are and grant them executive powers instead of legislative powers. Well, in that way, they can circumvent some of the and utilize power they don't have. And a lot of it is designed. The way it happened was because of rate making. All things that have to do with money have to be in the House of Representatives. So if they're setting interstate rates on petroleum passing through a pipe, then it's a legislative power. But it is treated like a executive power. Handled by people executive. Anyway, it's good to know that difference. Power can never be delegated, which the authority said to delegate never possess itself. If, in other words, Congress can't delegate a presidential power to the FCC. Okay? And yet, when you see what they've done, that's almost what it appears like they've done. Where there is no authority for establishing a rule, there is no necessity of obeying it. Useless power is to no purpose. Now, let me give you a very special case of this one where there is no authority for establishing a rule necessity of obeying it. This is the rule that applies to a judge's jurisdiction and subject matter in a case. If they do not have subject matter jurisdiction, any rule that they make can be disobeyed. However, if they do have subject matter jurisdiction, they have the right to make an erroneous decision. I hear no comment.
Repeat that last part.
I'm dealing with the judicial, the judge.
Okay.
If he has subject matter, okay, he also has the right to be in error when he makes the judgment. Okay?
Yes.
Is that difficult to understand?
No, it's not. I'm just surprised by some of what you've said.
If he doesn't have jurisdiction, you can disobey what he rules. If he does have jurisdiction and he makes an error in his judgment, you must obey what he rules.
Okay. Okay.
It's a very significant distinction. Now, you have the right to get it corrected.
Hmm.
Now, in today's system, it costs a lot of money to appeal. So, they will make erroneous decisions if they've acquired jurisdiction. Like saying you have to have a driver's license when you don't have a contract. So, you're left with appealing and spending all kinds of money to get what other little money, the fine cost, back.
Oh, no. So that's the game.
Well, you can call it one if you wish. But this is the abuse. If they intentionally make a wrong one, there's a maxim in there that takes care of that, and I'm trying to remember which one it is. But you can't break the law while, you know, engaging in practicing the law. One has authority when he has a legal or rightful power to act. Okay? And when we talk about jurisdiction of a judge, that's what we're talking about. If he doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction, and it's only recently that I developed the view that judges are not judges unless they're sitting on a case. Now, maybe you call them a judge or you treat them with respect, but they're no different than any other sovereign citizen. It's only when they have subject matter jurisdiction or personal jurisdiction that they have, you know, that they are being a judge. We're sitting in judgment. So that explains why you never hear the justices of the Supreme Court out speaking about amnesty. See, and then once the case is filed, they can't speak about it either. So it's totally a political issue if they speak about it beforehand. And so what you will find them talking about in speeches is things like the workings of the Supreme Court. And so on, or reviewing a judgment that's already been made. Or talking about what they meant in their dissent. He who can... my eyes just... Excuse me. He who contemns or contemptuously treats a command contemns the party who gives it. That's a new word to me, contemns. But contempt is not. And contempt is a disrespect for the judge. so contemns the party who gives it. Is that hard to understand? You could be totally not guilty of the crime you're in, but if you yell at the judge and say, "What's up?" Or, you know, or, "Oh, man," any of those sort of things, he can, for disrespecting the court and the judge, they can fine you and even jail you. And it's how they treat members of the bar who are getting out of line. Going to put you in jail over there overnight, Mr. Attorney. Any questions about any of those? Okay. Legislative authority. Wow. Today we have a situation of legislative bodies such as the state legislature or Congress is existing as a source for making laws. The question we face is, what is the authority for those legislative bodies to make laws we are subject to? This can only be answered by determining the relationship we have with the legislative body in question. So, the fundamental concept of American government is that all political power which exists resides in the people. Constitution of Virginia. Somebody want to read that? It's got better eyes than I do.
Sure, I'll do it. Constitution of Virginia, 1776, Section 2, that all power is vested in and consequently derived from the people, that magistrates are their trustees and servants, and at all times amenable to them. And then the Constitution of Massachusetts for 1780 says, all power residing originally in the people and being derived from them, the several magistrates and officers of government vested with authority, whether legislative, executive, or judicial, are their substitutes and agents, and are at all times accountable to them.
These declarations reveal the concept of delegation of powers. The people had political power or authority and delegated some of it to the legislature by declaring in their written constitution, the legislative authority shall be vested in a general assembly, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. This entity thus becomes a source of legislative authority. The people, in effect, said this body of men can enact laws for specific purposes, that is, promotion of health, safety, morals, and good order of the people or society. The U.S. Constitution enumerates specific topics that can be legislated upon. Regulated foreign and interstate commerce, and it should be regular foreign and interstate commerce, enact certain taxes, establish standards, etc. Thus, the legislative bodies derive certain powers from the people. The above declarations also reveal the nature of the legal relationship between the people and those in government. Government employees are the substitutes or agents or servants of the people. Thus, it is a contractual relationship which exists between the people and the legislature. The people have in effect hired or commissioned certain individuals to occupy and to perform certain duties and function within the offices and departments named in the Constitution. In performing these duties and functions, they are to conform to fundamental law, rights, and common law concepts, such as due process and the things prescribed in the written Constitution. Is this confusing to you?
No.
Basically, we've given some of our power to our representatives.
Yes. And then they write a law within it.
Does it say that we didn't lose the power that we gave them? I'm looking for that.
Delegation It's a very good question because it's difficult to answer. The answer is yes and no, William. You can always take it back. But just a story, he said that the interesting thing about our system is the individual empowers the government to bind him. You follow what he's trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Without you giving him the power, he could not write a law. But having given him the power, you have consented you will abide by it. Now, what is confusing about that is they've taught you to believe that you're granting this power to abide by it to that entity called the government. Instead, you must learn to realize, and I wish everybody in the United States of America had this one down pat right now. No, 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 no. Like, you gave that power to the central government so that you could share in giving that body the power to protect you all. So it is you have bound yourself to protecting the other. It isn't so that you can bind yourself that you gave him the power. When you gave the power for a common defense to the Congress of the United States, and to establish a military to do so, it is you playing your part in defending your fellow sovereigns. So that your power is being used to create an entity that is then used for the common defense, for the defense of all of us. Is that too heavy?
No, it's very clear.
So you didn't give your power, you shared your power.
No, you gave the power to the entity.
Okay.
But you delineated its purpose.
Okay.
And what you wouldn't have done it if you weren't set on defending your fellow man that's standing right beside you.
Mm-hmm.
You see my point? You didn't give the power to them so that you had an entity that could boss you around.
Mm-hmm.
You gave them the power they need to protect us all. Now, we're back to my concept of a majority of one.
Yeah.
A majority of one can bring the full power of the government to bear on... Oh. Great. What time is it?
It's 1:20.
Our governor has forgotten. Hang on. Hello, I'm on the Maxim. Be done in 6 minutes. Now, that's how to tell a governor what to do.
Really?
He said he'll be right back soon. Okay. Isn't this a great program?
Yeah.
Real experience. Self-government. What we have here, though, is the business of pledging mutually to one another. And that's the compact. People want to talk about this and that and the other, and we, the Texan government administration today, sees it as the social compact is the one that exists between sovereigns, not one between the sovereign and the government entity.
Government. Mm-hmm.
The government is a joint venture or an agent that is employed to allow the mutual interest of the sovereigns to be looked after. And so the sovereign says, if somebody ever wants, I am going to give the authority to this government to go protect them. To protect your rights, but it can't take my away. So that's what the Bill of Rights is all about. You see, the thing that's what's so different about our government is the compact is between the sovereigns. And that's consistent with my interpretation of what took place over history with humans. And that makes the law of contracts the most powerful law in the land, because that's what regulates the agreements between sovereigns. So they've entered into a gigantic agreement here to create a government that is bound to the duties defined by the Constitution for the United States. And back when, the people that were working on it realized they'd made a false start with the Confederate Congress and the Articles of Confederation. And that's why they went clear back to the people. The people voted and ratified. I have a copy, a handwritten schedule of the votes by county that ratified the Texas Constitution and ratified the annexation to the Union. And that is the compact. And that's what taught me it's the vote. The vote is the signature of the sovereign on an offer. He's placed his mark in the ballot square. And then that tally determines which of the individuals receives the offer.
Okay.
Then he takes an oath. And that oath, to me, is the highest and greatest and chiefest covenant that is imposed on any sovereign who is employed in the government with duties to serve. The duty to serve is a function of that covenant. It is the dilution of the significance of the oath of office that permits all of the vagaries and all of the rabbit trails and all of the breaches that have occurred in the past. In fact, to each individual, whether he's in the legislature or wherever he is, with his oath of office, he has a prior covenant if somebody brings him a treaty from another country, brings it into the Senate and says, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this, and there's something in it that breaks the individual's prior covenant to the sovereigns, he cannot agree with it. He has an obligation because of the prior covenant. And this is the one thing we don't teach, and no one enforces.
Mm. Yeah. How tragic.
Yes, it is. But we can always reverse it. We can bring it back. So, is this a difficult concept to grasp, or is it something that seems just right?
To me, it seems right, but I'm 77 years old, and I should have known about all this in the 60s.
Well, you know, Satan has his minions.
Yes.
Can't keep beating yourself in the head for not knowing it. I never enforced it as strongly as I have in the past 2 weeks. It wasn't until certain things were said by officers of our national that was in effect ordering us. And there was just something wrong with it. But as of, you know, we've recently had a chance to get the Supreme Court Justice, the Chief Justice, to hear that because of the oath of office, we have a prior covenant. Mm-hmm. And these are people who are highly skilled in contract law. And it never occurred to them. There was another one. Well, if you tell an estate who was told he was a member of the union that he is not now and he must sign a declaration to be readmitted to the union, you are putting them in duress. They have their oath of office to their sovereigns, which they took, which predates this. They have a prior covenant that they must hold to. And now you're telling them you're going to take away the sovereign's membership in the union if they don't sign it. I say, is that or is that duress? Is that not duress?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, as you know, any contract signed under duress is what?
Null and void.
No.
Correct.
Yes.
So it doesn't do you any good to pull duress on me. You lose. You like it?
Yes, I love it.
So you begin to respect the law when it's used right, don't you?
Yes, you do. You just wish that others would use it right.
But that the interesting part is they have made a commitment to re-inhabit. They have no right to misuse it. Okay. I must leave to go pick up Jack Chambers.
All right. Well, thank you, Chaplain Raymond.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to be presenter or we want to end the meeting?
You just go ahead and end it.
Okay. Timothy, you still there?
Yes, I'm there.
Thank you, Timothy, for being here.
Well, I try every day, but sometimes it's hard, you know.
Yes, I do.
But
I do the same. Some days I miss.
Yeah. Well, you know, the day gets away from us pretty fast sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you all. Thank you all very, very much.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you very much.